Hello everyone, and welcome to the coldest pixelated game dev podcast in the world, House of Games. Today, I'm joined by my not-so-warm host, Odo. But as we all know, it takes two to make a great podcast, and thus, let me introduce you, dear listeners, to our very special guest, Mr. Christopher Eng. But before I hand you the mic, let us unfreeze that door, open it, and enter this week's episode of House of Games.
Welcome everyone to this week's episode of House of Games. As usual, we have a special guest with us today, and this time it's none other than Christopher Eng. So without much further ado, would you like to introduce yourself and tell us who you are and what you do?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm Christopher, and I'm a composer and maybe an inventor. So my passion is in composing, but composing for games led me to also work a lot with tech. So I've been working with an adaptive music engine and audio engine for many years now. And I recently, together with awesome guys, started a new company called House of Elias, where we both do tech and compose and do audio design. So that is where I am today.
Cool. A lot of houses in this this episode. I like it.
What does Elias mean?
Yeah, actually, when it goes back 10 years, 11, 12 years maybe, when I had my idea of an adaptive music engine, I just had my son, Elias, and he was kind of the reason that I got things done, because before kids, you think that you have all the time in the world, so you don't do anything. At least that's how it was for me. Then you get a kid and you realize, oh, where did all time go? So he was the one that actually made me do this for real. But it also stands for Elastic Lightweight Integrated Audio System.
Oh,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
What exactly is this music? What did you call it? A music?
What is an adaptive music engine? If you write music for a movie, it's super easy. It's just do it because it's linear. In a game, the story isn't even played yet. So how do you write music for a game? So like in the movies, it could be like you could be too exact. We call that Mickey Mousing. It sounds ridiculous when the music and the picture is totally in sync all the time. In a game, that's not a problem because it's so hard to do. So this music engine, and now it's actually a complete audio solution, but how it started was it keeps track of the story in the game, you could say. Or actually, you can make it react to what happens in the story. So it still sounds linear. It sounds like you're writing for that particular way of playing the game. And it doesn't use this awful cross-fading things. It's more like it sounds written. So that's a short explanation of an adaptive music engine.
Something that brings to mind is when I played Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah.
And I would go somewhere and then some hyena, whatever. So long time ago I played this game. I barely remember what it is, but I think you're a cowboy. Anyway, something comes and then a different type of music starts. And it makes it more exciting, like dun, 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 whatever. So that's the things that comes to mind when you say an adaptive music engine, that it will sort of keep other things into consideration and fade over. But you said that this awful fading over thing, is that how we do things today? And this adaptive music thing will sort of make it in a different way.
Yeah, it's very different. It's very different. Some games just rely on crossfades and it's kind of brutal changes in the music, and some are more granular. But think of it this way. Let's say we play a Star Wars game and there's Star Wars music going on, and suddenly Darth Vader appears. if that would have been a movie, then you would write in ba 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 bom ba ba bom ba bam to the other music, and that's easy because it's linear. But you can't, in the game, you don't know when he's going to enter. You can't just play his music over the at the same time as other music. It will sound awful. So what this engine can do, it can actually blend this, it can actually make that theme for Darth Vader work with other music. That's one thing. Yeah.
Cool.
Okay, so yeah. So then you tie it to some kind of function in the game's code, then, the music.
Yeah, yeah. That could be, and it could also be like a very common thing is like, let's say you're a it's an adventure game and you have health and health meter, and then you can tie the health meter to certain aspects of the music, maybe the percussion, and then you can, the number of enemies could be like how many string players are there in the music, and you can do it so the gamer doesn't really know that things are going on, but the experience for the gamers, the music is super tied to the game, and we can like it's very common in if you come out from the cinema and people ask you what you think about the music, and if your answer is, well, I didn't think of the music, that's a good thing, because then the music is really tied into the story of the movie. And when we come to the same thing with games, that is when we have found the Holy Grail, when the music just enhance the story or experiences in the game.
Cool. Could it also be used, I play, for example, Stalker, and I'm walking through this train. Is it Stalker? Yeah. Or Metro, whatever. And then there's a bunch of NPCs talking at the same time. And this is quite common in a lot of games. It's just like everything at once, and you can't hear what anyone is saying because it feels like I am walking through these invisible triggers that starts their conversations, and then I walk through 10 triggers and then it's just 10 people talking at the same time. Could this engine be used for that too, to sort of fade them in and out naturally?
Absolutely, the new version of the engine, because it takes care of sound effects and dialogue and things like that as well. It used to be just for music, but now it's for everything.
Very cool.
Cool. And what does it take to make something like this? Like, how long have you worked on it from, like, the idea stage to, like, this version?
If I would have known that when I started, I wouldn't have started. So the old engine called Elias 1, 2, and 3, I think it took, like, 5-6 years. And this new engine, almost the same amount of time, and it's not even released yet. So it's hard to do.
Are the previous engines released?
Yeah, 1, 2, and 3. Yes, but we in this new company we have taken. We don't have any products on the market right now because this year is kind of our in-house year. We work with three different studios making music and sound design for them. And then we're going to re-release this new version of the engine in maybe March, I hope.
Wow. Do you do coding as well?
No, I don't. The only thing I can code is in Commodore C64. So I don't I don't code. So it's me and we have two great programmers and a product owner and a UX designer and an audio designer and we are two composers in this company. So the programmers focus entirely on our product, and me and Martin, one of the composers, and Eric, an audio designer, is working with games, doing sound design and composing right now.
Cool. And who is the target audience for this product? Is it only like AAA companies, or is it like on a level where an indie such as myself could use some portion of it, or what is your take on that?
My new take on that is in this our new way of thinking of things is we We can do that now. We work with interesting projects. If that's an indie thing or a AAA thing, it really doesn't matter. So this year we focus on just finding interesting games that will really use our tools. But when we release it, it's really for every... it's supposed to... The thing with this is it's supposed to be really easy to use. There are others out there, great engines, but they're made for a different era. They're kind of old, so when you open them up, you get kind of scared. But we tried to make a really modern visual node-based interface that people demand today. So it's supposed to be like if you're an indie, if you do your first game, you will be up and running for a day or so. But you can go deeper if it's a big project.
Is it like I use Unity? Would that be like this is a separate software and then I transfer everything over to Unity? Or
you plug it into Unity, so you have it running at the same time. Yeah.
Ah, okay. So it's a plugin. Oh, cool.
And I'm curious about the music. So the music that you would use with the software, do you have, like, I imagine that there's like two scenarios. Either you have like made all of these pre-made tracks that you then fit into different scenarios in the game, or you could have some kind of AI generation, or you have like MIDI tracks or something like that, that you sort of, that's not like a recording per se, but rather something more modular, or what you would call it. So what is the approach if you want to use it?
Well, I think what we focus on, the main idea I had many, many years ago was like, how do I make a real symphonic orchestra be adaptive to a game? So it relies very much on real recordings, real audio recordings. And then after a while, in the last three, we added something called MIDI, where you can trigger soft synths. There's a lot of potential in that because it's way faster and it's CPU very friendly. You can do a lot of things you couldn't do with the audio. And now when we're looking at the future, of course, there's so many things, there's procedural audio and we have AI things. AI is going to be very, very big, of course. But I think mostly for us, mostly maybe in the composing stage of the music, there will be composers and there will be AI composers. And what we will probably use AI for and already had started with is like to make, to help the music sound live in the game. Like take help from AI to make this transition sound written, because you can't release the game with the composer inside the game. So if the music is still live in a way, you have to rely on technical things to make it sound really good in a, because you never know what a person could do. Like as a composer, you have composed this music for a room here, and then completely different music for a church 10 mile away. And what happens if you in that game, maybe you can build the portal, maybe you can go from that room to that church, and I couldn't predict it as a composer, then I need to rely that the technology will help that transition to sound good and so on. So you could say that we think of like AI like help where the composer can't do it because he can't make himself into ones and zeros and just tag along the game.
Interesting.
Well, that's really like a next level thing. It's really impressive, but I'm curious. So as far as I understand, then the software will provide all of the sound that you need. It's not something that you necessarily have to do yourself. Is that correct?
No, you can think of the software as completely empty. It's up to you as a composer or a sound designer to do all your composing and sound designing recording things like you have always done, but it's made to make the music and the audio adaptive to the game. So it's like the connection to the game.
Yeah, right.
I'm curious, what's your music history? Where did you start? Like, did you go to school or did you just play?
I come from a small village in Sweden called Färila. And I started a lot of, we call it rock schools at the, what do you call it? The place where you hang out after school. I can't find a name now. But so I taught a lot of people how to play music, and some of these people I started bands with and so on. So I played in a lot of bands growing up, and then I went to Musikgymnasium after the ninth grade, and continued playing with a lot of bands and moved completely to jazz. I only played jazz for a couple of years. And from there, I went to a school called Betel, where it was even more jazz, and then to the Royal Academy of Stockholm. And after all these years of jazz, I started to hate it. So I tried to find new things to do. And so my two last years at the Royal Academy, I devoted to composing. And composing for film and games and things like that. So I took all the classes I could find. I should also say that now I love jazz again and I play some jazz. But I think that's kind of you have to go through that. You have to go through totally loving a music style and just devote yourself to it. And then you have to leave it for some years before it gets matured again. But my idea was to become a bass player and work with that. But I also started as a teacher. I taught for many years in composing and ensemble and music anthropology and things like that. And also arranged a lot of music and played a lot of music. And then I came up with this idea. And then I stopped teaching and started with this 12 years ago or so, maybe 11. So my background is very much from a band kind of thing. I played in a lot of bands and a lot of instruments. I worked with a lot of music for theaters and musicals and things like that. But I also went to all school I could find because I liked it. I love having a teacher really certain of what he likes, and maybe you don't like it, but it's good to hear someone that's really secure in what he likes, and then you can cherry pick. So that is what I did with all my educations and things like that.
And how did all of this lead into gaming? Because if listeners don't know, you composed the music for It Takes Two, which is a Game of the Year game a couple of years ago, which is very big. How did you end up making games for music?
At the Royal Academy, I actually took a course in game music composing. That didn't lead to anything. But then a friend of mine called me and said, I have a project you need to be in. We're two composers, but we need a third one. And it's the coolest project ever. So I just jumped on. And it actually was the coolest project ever. So we were three composers, and we wrote for Norrköping's Philharmonic Orchestra. And actually, I didn't. My part of that was to sample cool new instruments and new sounds for the game and so on, for the composers. It was super cool, an American company, and then they canceled the game after 2 years. And so we had like this, you know, grave beer, or what you call it, we just sat down and talked about this, and the project has been so secret, and we really longed for telling the world what we have done for 2 years. But now it was even more secret. And and it still is a secret what that game was, and everyone in the industry knows about that game, I think, but I can't tell it here. But what was interesting was that I told my colleagues that, isn't it interesting that we've done this music with a complete symphonic orchestra and it sounds great, but it has nothing to do with the game, actually. It's the music has, but it doesn't fit well in the game because there's not the right technology for it. And that is when I come up with this idea, which led me to not composing for games for many, many years, because I became this leader of this company. So that became my work. But then I actually heard from Josef Fares about this new game. And for me, I have to tell you this, because this is kind of interesting. When I teach composers in different schools, I always say this, don't try to be good at everything. Find your niche, and because that is what the market wants. And they don't want this guy that can do some of that, some of that, some of that. They would like this guy to, yeah, that's the best, I don't know, metal composer in Sweden. Then he gets that gig. But when I heard about this game, I understood this is for me, because every level of the game has a new music style. And that is me. So that is what the opposite of what I used to teach my students, because I don't follow it myself. I play all styles because I love it. So I almost forced myself into that project. And I'm so glad I did, because I've never had more fun than that in my life.
I imagine they enter the office and they're like, leave. And you're like, no, yeah. I'm not leaving.
It was almost like that. I knew how Josef works. And I know, because I remember he said to me, but Christopher, I can get anyone to write music for this game. And I heard myself say, well, don't you want the best? And I have never said that before or after, but it was good that I said it at that time, I think, because that's the kind of guy Josef is, because he said, ah, that's good. I like that. All right. So let's try it.
It's a very un-Swedish way to say something like that.
Very un-Swedish and un-Christopher. I've never done that before.
Cool. But I'm just curious, like, to begin with. So how did he contact you, or how did you get in contact with him to begin with? Because, I mean, to me, he's sort of like this famous director and stuff. So how do you even get to that interview to begin with?
They had a game called A Way Out, and they used our technology for that game. So that is how I got to know him. So, yeah, that is why. And that is why I was in the building and could tell him that I want to be in this next project.
I'm curious. So I have released a couple of games, and I was just feeling like shitting my pants when I, you know, the release date and all that. I'm curious, when you work on this, such a big project like this, what is it like, the feeling when the game is coming out? I remember the game was just a huge hit from the get-go, and it was like on all the podcasts and praise to the heavens, and obviously game of the year after that. Like, how did that feel?
Yeah, for me, I decided when I took this job that I won't count hours, so because that would make me depressed, because I put my soul into this, and I worked so much more than what I told people, and we did over 12 hours of music. It's extreme. It's absurd. You never do that. So I worked so hard, because I also had this company to run on the side. So I worked so hard for 2 years on this project, and I gave it everything. And Gustav, my co-composer, did as well. And we kind of triggered each other to do the best. For one thing, we had some rules that we really followed. Like, if we can use a live instrument, we will do. So all the percussion, all the guitars, all the bass, and everything that you can easily record are real instruments. The only thing that is fake is like the symphonic orchestra. We also have these rules that, like, in the first level in the shed, we should only use like metal instruments, and in the tree level only use wooden instruments, and so on.
Oh, wow. So cool.
Cool.
We had so many rules. I think I started with these rules, and Gustav continued. So I remember in the tree, there's a fight with a beetle, and we really needed brass. But we couldn't, because it's it needs to be a wood instrument. So I remember I mm-hmm. took like this might be kind of nerdy, but I took like 20 bassoons or something like that, just to make it sound like real brassy and so on. So we really obeyed our rules. And with that said, so when this game came out, we already knew that we have done everything to make it good. And we know that every discipline had, so, and every discipline had worked, like, it was extreme amount of work. So we knew that the game was good. But of course, there were some shocks. I remember seeing when it won Game of the Year. For me, it was crazy to see when they present the game, it was my music with a live symphonic orchestra. And I was like, okay, when did they do that? Who arranged this? Because I didn't send them anything. So it was like they're playing my music here. And that was awesome. And then actually we released this as an album, and that album won Soundtrack Album of the Year. And that was also like I stayed up all night listening to that. It's Gang Awards, it's called. It's like the Oscars for audio in games. And It Takes Two was like nominated in so many categories, but didn't win anything. So when it came to Album of the Year, I was like more like, okay, maybe I should go to sleep. No, I'm going to stay up for a while. And then we won. And I got this message, can you be live in 10 minutes? And I was like in my underwear, and my hair was like this. So I had to, all right, so I'm in an interview there. So it was so many crazy things with this, as you say, the how it was received. So I'm so happy for that, because, even as a gamer, I'm not that heavy gamer, but just playing this game, it's so fun to play. It's like a joy. So I think it deserves it.
Yeah, since we had you on the show, I've been listening to the soundtracks, and the game I'm working on now, it's a mini open world, so it's like a lot of things happening in a very compact area, and it's also different storylines and different people and all that stuff, so I found it very nice to listen to the music from It Takes Two, because like you said, it's like every level is a different thing, which I felt gave me a lot of inspiration when I made my own game, because I like to listen to music when I brainstorm or whatever. But what I wanted to say was I come across this thing called podcast gamers. They just turn off the music and then listen to a podcast while playing games. Now, I don't think It Takes Two is that type of game, but what do you feel when I say that people might have turned off your music and you sit and listen to a podcast instead?
Yeah, I think it's absurd, but the whole thing, you know, there's no other media where you can turn the music off. So it's wrong from the beginning, from the start of the game creation, that you can turn one part of the experience off. That's crazy. But since you can do that, I mean, even I have done that for, I used to play a game called, my mobile phone, the Star Wars Galaxy of Heroes. And it's one of my favorite composers. It's John Williams. But there's too little of his music in that. So even I turn it off after a while. So I understand why you sometimes have to turn the music off. But it also means that you didn't succeed with the music in the game.
Mm-hmm. Interesting take, yes.
Yeah, I would say also as, I guess, sort of a podcast gamer myself, is that sometimes I think it's not necessarily a reflection of the music that it doesn't, deliver on what it's supposed to. But for me, at least, it's rather that the gameplay doesn't really deliver. So say, for example, the last time I did this was with Just Cause 3. And that it has amazing sound, amazing music. Like, everything about it is just so, like, made with love. But that, it sometimes, because that's an open world, and that's just gigantic, the whole world. So, and then you have so many tasks which are just go to every part of the world and then, like, take over a settlement or something. It's kind of sort of repetitive, and that repetitiveness makes it sort of boring without something else, I guess. So I guess, for me at least, it's not about the music, but rather the gameplay.
Yeah, and that's really interesting, because I also, when I teach composers and talk about the differences in the music and movies and games, then I ask them, okay, so in a movie you might need 1.5 hours of music or so, depending on how long the movie is. In a game you will need like 10 to 1,000 hours of music. And why do you need that? Well, of course, because you don't only play a game for 2 hours. You play it a lot more hours. So, and then you play it differently. So you need music for every way of playing that game. And there are ways to help with that. I mean, the first game that used Elias was a game called Gauntlet by Arrowhead. And it was a really early version of Elias. And the thing that Elias could do back then was to make the music sound different every time you play the game. It shuffled stems and it shuffled things. And I actually played that game many years later with a friend. It's a very rare nowadays. I have two kids and so on. But we had this weekend just for playing that game. And I asked my friend on the last day, are you tired of the music yet? And I said, no. Well, that's great. Of course, the composers, Andreas Kingen and Johan Nilsson, are great. But also, we hadn't heard the same music on the whole weekend. It was new music all the time because of the variation and so. So there are ways to handle that. But what is needed is that the director or the boss of that game need to demand that from the audio team, I think.
This sounds really cool. Like, if this software, I can imagine it's a little bit maybe too complicated for me, or because I really don't get music and all that. But because I have a friend, he's asking some of the questions I ask you, he asked me to ask, because he's a composer in Japan, and he's going to make music for my game. And like I said, it's like a mini open world, but if you played Harvest Moon or Stardew Valley, these types of games where you have seasons and you do the same sort of work every day. But I have other things to make my game special. But so he's making the music for me, and I'm like, when I play these types of games, I grow sick of like the winter theme at, let's say, day 15. It's just like, oh my god, kill me. But in my game, you also have this, it's called a shantytown area where there's so low class people live. And I was like, it would be neat if we could at least sort of like, when you enter this area, it would be the same song, like the summer theme, but a little bit more metallic, like with metallic instruments to make it reflect the shanty area you're in. But what you said there about the Gauntlet game, I can't even imagine how it works. Like if I have a track, how the hell does it know what to do and how does it change it?
In that game, and this is starting to become really weird. It's like I'm selling you my software live in the podcast. I'm not trying to do that. There are others as well. There are Wise and there's Fmod and there's other programs that do things like this. But the easiest way, like they did in Gauntlet with our software, was like you have the strings, the brass, the percussion separately, but they work together. And then you have like the same song, but different versions of the song, variations for every track. So say for instance that you have, let's say we have four tracks and you have four variations on every track. That's four times four. It easily becomes a lot of new music with that simple thing. So it's kind of, it's a simple solution that maybe people don't know about. Because I always wonder when I hear these short loops of music in games, I'm like, that's so easily fixed. Why don't you do it? So it's all about making parts of the music separate and make them work together in different variations and combinations and so on.
So I think my friend is using Cubase. He lives like 5 minute walk from here. I go there. We have Papa Freda, Daddy Friday. I know how it feels to have kids. You never have time for yourself, but we get to have a Papa Freda at least once a month. And then we sit there and drink beer and usually listen to music. And he's just amazing. I'm just blown away by music people. I think he used Cubase.
Yeah, me too.
So would that then connect to your software? And from there, it can make these sort of random songs so it's not the same over and over again? Or how would it connect to Unity from Cubase, what he makes from there to your software to Unity? How does that work?
It's like if you imagine in Unity you can play playback music. And that's a very simple player. So in that case you do music in Cubase and you bring it to import it into Unity and you just play it. And Elias, and I have to say Fmod and Wise as well, is so it doesn't become like I'm pitching. it's more like you bring in a really fancy player into Unity that can play not only the stereo track, it can play different stems, and you can set up rules for every stem. Like in Elias, it works like this. Let's say the strings can only react in a certain way to your calls. Like maybe you have set it to you can change variation every fourth bar, let's say that. And then you have a track next to it that is percussion. It's allowed to change anytime. And then you have brass, it can change every second bar. That means when you ask the music to change, the percussion will move directly to the new thing. And the strings will wait probably longest and the brass in the middle. And that sounds like it's written that way. Because then, let's say you're just exploring something and suddenly a dragon appears and it's battle. Then the percussion can be really fast and just move over to the fight music and the strings come soon and so on. It sounds like that was intentional. The other way to do it is like if you just use simple things, it's like you have this exploration music and then suddenly there's battle music and it's for me it's like, or even if it's a crossfade, it's even worse if it's like orchestral music. You have this big orchestra playing a thing and then it crossfades to another orchestra. In my head it sounds like, okay, so I have two symphonic orchestras. It just doesn't work for me, at least. And the most important thing, I'm completely out of the game when that happens. So, but maybe your question was like, if you do it in Cubase or whatever, for me, it's also more like the idea with the Elias was like, you can do it in Cubase or you can do it on pen and paper. You can do it with a field recorder. It doesn't matter what you record your music in. It's the technology that needs to understand your music and put rules on it and so on. So you need that. So Elias is both an arranger and a tool that ships with the game.
Cool. Wow, this sounds really cool. I'm going to make my friend listen to this episode and see if it seems to click with him.
But then again, other things like the reuse of, if you have your music in small parts, you can always reuse things. And so if you have the percussion separately on a level, then you can maybe level 10 in the game, you can buy, okay, maybe I reuse that. So it can also help the composer. The funny thing with reusing is like in It Takes Two. One thing, I think a rule Joseph had was like, we're not allowed to reuse anything. And even if we were allowed to do that, you really couldn't because this first level with a big symphonic orchestra, and then there's blues in the next level. How do I don't have anything to I can't put big strings on the blues. So that game became more like it's a very special game. It became more focused on the composing, focused on really giving love to each music style and so on. The only thing that is coming back all the time in that game is Hakim, the annoying book. So and I what I did for him was to do a really annoying theme for him. I did this parody flamenco guitar. So every time you try to move forward in the game, it could be like ragadang, and you know, oh no, I have that we could actually reuse, because there were so many places in the game where he appeared. So I actually, one day I just played a lot of flamenco and I gave it to Gustav, my co-composer, and said, do whatever you want with it. And I put it here and there. And it worked that way.
Cool. I want my friend also asked if you had a lot of freedom while recording, but it sounds like you guys put a bunch of rules on yourself. So maybe, but within the rules, did you feel like you had a lot of freedom from, I guess what he meant is also from the client, which in this case would be Josef.
It was a very, very long, what do you call it? Like the first thing I did was the main theme of the game. And in a normal game, you maybe do like 3 or 4 takes on it, and then you decide if you're for most composers. In this, I think it was the 15th try or something like that, because it was so hard for me to realize what. Now it's easy, now when the game is there. But you can imagine when you're in the process and you're dealing with a vacuum boss, for instance, or the next day there's a squirrel mobster, and then there's a crying girl, and there's so many things, so it's so hard to see what the main theme should be. So the first attempt was like really complicated orchestral things, because I thought it was a really complicated puzzle game. And Josef didn't like that at all, and he tried to explain what he wanted and so on. And at my last attempt, I thought, okay, I need to rethink everything. And I realized, like, the game is really about this little girl that doesn't want her parents to divorce. So it should be her theme. And I thought also, take it even one more step. She should be able to play the theme. So my kids should be able to play this theme. It should be really easy. So I only used white keys in C major and made a really simple theme, the simplest I've ever done in my life. And that was the right theme for this game. And also, when Josef heard it, it was like, there you have it. And after that process, for every level got shorter and shorter. So for Shed, yeah, there were some different takes, but then in Tree, the most complicated music in the whole game, it's like crazy orchestral things. He trusted us more and more. So the last themes were kind of easy to decide.
It's interesting you say that. My friend, he made a sexy song. And then he showed me, like, what do you think about this? So he makes music for anime and games as well. I was like, man, this is really sexy. And then his boss is like, maybe in Europe this is sexy, but here in Japan this is not. So we need a new one. So it sounds so tough to try to make music based on the director or whoever's mind. Like, yeah, that's very impressive that you can pull it off.
Yeah, the hardest thing was, like, because you have to realize that people's idea of things might not be like we're supposed to have, like, Josef wanted Jurassic Park music. He said like a reference. You know Jurassic Park? And I was, yeah, are you sure? But okay, does that? So I did really big orchestra, luxurious strings, and you know how the music is in Jurassic Park. And he heard it and said, no, that's awful. Nothing like that. I was like, okay. And he said, more Jurassic Park. And I did even more luxurious strings, and I did it so big, so never sound so big in my studio. And then he said, but have you seen Jurassic Park? And I said, yes, I have. And I said, but you know, there's like trees and stones. And so it was actually his visual memory of the movie, not the music. So then, okay, you mean more like back to the basic roots and stones percussion and think, okay, now I understand. So you need to be really careful of what's his reference. So that can be tricky sometimes, yeah.
Wow.
Well, I have a question about that, actually. So from the other perspective, say that for me, for example, if I want to do a game, how do I know... So say that I would have a composer that could help me with the music. How do I know what to tell them what I want? Because I don't know myself. So say, for example, I don't know, I want this level to be exciting or something, but I don't know what music goes with that. Is it, you know, should it be fast or slow, or when you know like nothing of music at all?
If you know nothing of music at all, I think the best way would be to... trust the composer. But what I mean with that is like, don't try to explain it in musical terms. Explain it in emotions. I really want to be anxious here and stressed out. Then that composer will know how to do that, I think. And then for me, it worked really well to give me references. I don't get stuck in them. Some composers really get stuck in the references. But I like if I get, well, I like this time from Hans Zimmer, this music. I like when I get that because then I know, okay, some kind of this music, but I'm going to do it my way. Some composers might go too far to the reference, but for me it works.
Yeah, cool. And I've heard I don't know if you would call it a problem, but that composers for movies, sometimes like the big movies, the way or what the director orders is something like they say, well, could you take the music from Gladiator, for example, and then just do the same except just change it up a bit so it's not copyright infringement. Do you get a lot of that in games as well, or is that like you get more freedom to do what you want to do, or what's your take?
I have gotten these requests a lot of times, but I kind of refuse to do it. but I present something that's similar, of course, because they want that. But I don't want to copyright from another composer, unless that is the point. Like in It Takes Two, you're flying a plane. There's a plane fight, and it's really Indiana Jonesy. And at that point, I said, well, why not make really John Williams Indiana Jonesy kind of style here? And so that's fun to do as well. But sadly, there's a lot of composers that just, okay, obeys and take this reference and just copy it and try to, it's kind of sad. And AI is going to do that now for a couple of years ahead. It's going to just copy things.
Do you think, my friend also always talk about finding your style when you get into the music industry and all that. Have you found your style, and could you describe it?
Yeah, to find your own style. For me, that's the most important thing, because especially now, I think there has been a time. I know when I did music in the beginning of 2000, I'm ultra old. It was it could be like a request. Could you do this really big Hans Zimmer thing, and that was hard to do. Today, that's the easiest thing in the world, because you just buy Hans Zimmer instrument packs for your computer, and you just it's very easy to do that. I'm not saying it's easy to compose like Hans Zimmer. I'm saying it's easy to find his sound, and so that's not going to be your strength in the future. AI is going to do that better than you. So in the future, I think it's, or today, from today on moving forward, it's to be a composer that get gigs, you need to have a really certain style. Otherwise, you don't have any place, I think. If you just can copy people, AI do it cheaper. So that's not going to be a job for the future. And I think that is good.
Wow.
I love to hear what composers are going to do in the future to stand out from the AI and library music, because we need to do something.
Do you think you can compete well in that environment?
Me personally?
Yeah.
I hope so. I tend to, you know, I this is my passion. Here in my studio, I have like too many analog synths and too many. I just love finding new things. So that is for me. I've never been a composer. I almost can't compose if I just have a laptop and a keyboard, because I don't get any inspiration. I really need new things all the time. That is why, like in It Takes Two, when I've done orchestral music for a month, every waking hour, and then move on to the next level, and I realize, okay, it's like jukebox pop music I'm going to do now for a month. And that's super inspirational. So I love new, I do new things all the time. So maybe that makes me right for the future of how to compose in the future. I actually think it's going to be like every technology has taken this journey. So I think I'm going to need AI as well. We need 600 hours of music for this annoying forest in the game. Can you compose it? No, maybe I should let my AI do it, because it's not important. And then I focus on the main things in the game or so. So I think it's going to be a tool where you kind of use. But I'm struggling to love AI, but I don't. If I were like the dictator of the world, I would put every AI algorithm to 1999 or something like that, and then stop it there. Because I think it's so boring to listen to AI music. And I think it's great. So I'm not saying it's horrible, but I don't find it interesting.
No, I agree.
Interesting. And it's sort of similar to my own take on AI, that I think that, sure, it is going to replace some manual labor, but on the other hand, you have the opportunity to sort of automate all of like the menial stuff and the stuff that, you know, it just takes a lot of time, but it isn't, as you say, that important. And then you have a lot more resources and time to focus on the really important stuff, or you can have more time to do it even better, the things that you do manually.
One thing we brought in our own technology was like, when you do music for a game, you need to loop the music, because you can never know. It has no start and stop. So every music piece in the game is looped. So when it ends, it starts from the beginning and so on. And that is kind of hard to make nice sounding loops. So as a composer, you have to spend time on that. And that is super boring. There's no composer in the world that thinks looping is a fun job. So in Elias, it's auto-looped, so you don't have to think about it. Elias takes care of the looping, and I'm sure other programs do as well. But that's an example of an area where technology can really help you with things that really doesn't matter. You don't need to be a composer to loop your music.
Interesting. Yeah, very cool. I don't know. We're approaching 1 hour, I think, of recording. So, Rune, do you have anything more before we start to close the episode?
Yeah, one more question. You sort of touched on it, I think. But I'm curious to how much time did you have from the time you got the project of It Takes Two until the deadline? Like, how many months or whatever?
trying to remember. I think I worked at least officially half time for maybe 20 months or something like that. So a little more than 1.5 years. But I actually worked more, but I didn't clock these hours. but that is just because I'm like, it was a decision of my own. Like, okay, I need a snare drum here. And it would take me like 5 minutes to just play it on my keyboard. But I instead mic'd a real snare drum and did it. And I thought, I'm the only one that's going to hear this in the game. So let's not clock these hours.
But I love those things. I always talk about it with Oda in my game now. I make so much, put so much effort into things that no one will notice or no one will even experience. But those are the things I think makes games special. I'm also curious, one final question. How many instruments can you play, like in the real world?
In the real world? Well, I started as a bass player and then guitar and then drums. I actually started on drums when I was a kid. And then I moved more and more to the keyboard. So these instruments are the instruments that I feel I can, if I'm needed for a gig, they can call me on these instruments. Then I play the theremin. Are you familiar with what that is? It's an instrument where you have two antennas and you play in the air, and it sounds like a UFO or something like that. And the reason it sounds,
I was gonna say, it sounds very hip. It's something you find in Burning Man.
Exactly. And the reason it sounds kind of funny is that it's so hard to play. So many recordings of a theremin is by people that really can't play the theremin. But it's a hard instrument, and I played a lot of theremin back in the day. I played in, it's a guy called Orvar Sävström, has his orchestra things he's doing, and one is for science fiction music. So it's a live symphonic orchestra, and then there's, in that case, a theremin as well. Mm. So I played the theremin, and then some flutes, and I just bought an electric cello. And then there's percussion, and so I try to play. What I can't play any brass instruments.
Okay.
So what is a brass instrument? Like a xylophone or?
Trumpet or trombone or.
Oh, right. I get it.
Yeah. And I don't play reed instruments. I don't play saxophone or so. But I play some strings and some flutes. But mainly I play like the band instruments more.
Cool.
Very cool. Well, then I think we should start to close the episode then, if nothing else. But before we do that, so Christopher, would you like to just plug yourself or your company? Like, where should we send our listeners, if you will?
Please listen to It Takes Two soundtrack. That's I'm very proud of that. And I'm happy to have done that. And then, you can. House of Elias is a company, and we will release cool things next year.
Cool, very cool. Do you have, like, in short, could you list some games that you worked on or that the company has produced music for, so that if people want to, like, experience your work themselves, what should they play?
Yeah, so for me as a composer, I've been in like 4 canceled games, so they can't find those. But then it takes 2, and then me and Martin is in Whiskey and Zombies like as composers. But then the technology has been in like Rage 2, Mutant Year Zero, Gauntlet, A Way Out, and it's 40 games. I am trying to, maybe 50 games or something. This new awesome game by Bearded Ladies that I can't remember right now. That's the newest. And games from Bearded Ladies has awesome music. So if for nothing else, play these games. It's Robert Lundgren, a great composer and a great adaptive composer. We really use technology really well.
Cool. Very cool. My closing words for this episode, I'm just really, really happy that we could do this episode. It's sort of a cool thing for me to hear all these backstage things about this game that I love. So it's cool to like talk to someone in real life that has worked on it and to hear like the ideas behind it and so on. So it's really impressive. So, and thank you so much for all of your hard work on that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it was more fun than hard work. Thank you.
And thank you so much again for doing this episode. And thank you, Rune, for being my co-host as always. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And we will be right back next week, next Wednesday. So stay tuned. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.